the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
You're back with Gene and Chris at the Paracast. And no, ladies and gentlemen, I have not been abducted, although some of our enemies would prefer I was abducted. You haven't been abducted lately, have you, Chris?
No. But what enemies? I didn't know we had enemies. We have enemies?
I think they're people who don't like what we do. They criticize us for running too many commercials, even though we run the same number as Coast to Coast AM, in the same type of schedule in terms of the frequency. They criticize us if we ask questions that are too tough. They criticize us if we ask questions that seem too tame. They criticize us because we break at regular times for a sponsor break, like all commercial radio shows do. Or they just can't stand us. They don't like your jokes. They don't like my jokes.
Yeah, but hate's an awful, awful strong word there, Gene. I think maybe people might have issues, but I don't think... Hey, we're lovable guys, man.
Well, a few things I've read are more than that, especially when they post things on iTunes and elsewhere. But I think that's the nature of posting reviews of something. Because people can post anonymously. They're not accountable to anything. They don't hold back. And sometimes they're just rival shows who want to attack the competition. Or rival products if it's software. Or book authors or things like that. There you go. Anyway, I was thinking about abductions because just this past weekend I saw a UFO abduction movie called Dark Skies. Now, I know most of you remember Dark Skies as a 1996 NBC TV series produced by Bryce Zabel, who's been on the show a couple of times. And that was kind of one of these UFO Roswell kind of shows. It didn't make it past the first season, but gotten a lot of good reviews. So what happened here is the producers of the movie Paranormal Activity, you've heard of that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, with all the shaky cams and the night vision, all that stuff. They produced a more traditional movie called Dark Skies, starring Keri Russell, whom you might remember from a TV comedy called Felicity, and she's also star of a new show called The Americans, where she plays a Soviet agent planted in the U.S. pretending she's an American citizen. All right, very good actress. She carries the movie. So it's about aliens who are following this family. It's kind of exaggerated. I won't give you the spoiler in case you want to watch it. It's not a bad film. I thought it was going to be a load of junk, but it's actually done very well. The suspense is kept to a minimum. You don't have all these explicit violence scenes. A lot of things are suggested, and I think it's a better way to make a movie, so they actually did a very good job on it. But I think about abductions when we go back to last week's appearance with Denise Stoner and Kathleen Martin, and as you know, Denise and her husband have had some very serious abduction encounters. This has formed the basis of a lot of comments in our forums. Some talk about, of course, sleep paralysis, but how does sleep paralysis relate if you're in your car, you see something, and then 3 hours have passed? How do you explain that? How do you explain when someone apparently has some kind of implant in their body? How do you account for stuff like that? And that's what continues to bother me about this thing. I don't think that she's the kind of person, Denise Stoner, to just make it up, because her background is pretty serious.
Yeah.
She has a pretty straightforward background working for the government. She's worked as a UFO investigator for MUFON, but that, for the most part, is a pretty straight-laced organization.
Yeah.
You don't have lots of crackpots and cranks hanging out there. So the question goes back to it, what happened to her?
It's a real head-scratcher, that's for sure. I've always been a fence-sitter when it comes to this particular mystery. Maybe I'm jealous that I wasn't taken up on a ship or something. I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. I think a lot of these accounts bear scrutiny, and they do deserve investigation, but it's really difficult to determine who's actually having real experiences that they can't explain and who may be delusional. I think you have to separate out the real good cases. I don't think all people's claims are necessarily accurate. So we need to pull out the best cases and really, really look at them and come up with some sort of creative approach, I think, to investigating these things. So we mentioned a few things at the end of the episode last week. So I'm just puzzled. Her very interesting account that occurred in South Park, there's been a history of just amazing activity there. So it doesn't surprise me a bit that she had what appears to be on the surface some sort of abduction type event. I mean, where did all that time go? So
the question is, what really happened? Are they interpreting what really happened? And this is where I sort of feel we diverged in our paths from what they were telling us to what we were trying to suggest, which is, are they, number one, remembering the experience as it was? Are they remembering the experience as they interpret it in a very subjective way because it's so alien to their experience? Or is the experience somehow manipulated for them? So they see something that somebody else is generating, but that's not actually what's going on. Now, one of the things they claim to use in their research is something that I will call a fact. A fact being some piece of information. And law enforcement officers do this too, by the way, where they withhold a piece of evidence and use that as a basis to evaluate somebody's claims. So in the case of a law enforcement officer, maybe to see whether a person is guilty or innocent or knows something about a crime that they could not have known. So in the case of abductees, some abduction researchers have this fact, this piece of information, that if their questioning reveals something that affirms this fact, they believe the abduction.
Yeah, I've done that too. I have some key phrases, observations that instantly make me pay attention when I hear them. And it's not surprising that they've developed their own early warning sort of red flag system. It makes sense.
The question, of course, is, can that information leak? As soon as it leaks, as soon as people know what the fact is, then they can exploit it. You see, this goes back to a time where years ago, Ray Palmer, involved in science fiction and UFOs and was the co-founder of Fate magazine, he once said he had a fact by which he judged whether UFO cases were real. And people said, well, tell us the fact. Why withhold it? And his argument always was, if he did, then it could be exploited and people could create fake experiences. So he keeps it to himself. Now, supposedly in his final years, he had begun to reveal this fact, but never seemed to have gotten around to it. So who knows? But the thing I wonder about here is, even if the fact that an abduction researcher like a Kathleen Marden uses is a valid way to research it, it doesn't prove what the cause is. It only proves that someone had what appears to be a valid experience. It doesn't tell us whether it accurately reflects the real experience. It doesn't tell us whether it's ET, whether it's a higher power, whether it's computerized intelligence like John Keel once talked about, whether it's something just manipulating with us or something else.
Right, or like Stephen Greer maintains that all abductions, real abductions, are done by the military.
I wouldn't be surprised if some are, but, you know, we don't want to attribute anything that's factual to Stephen Greer. That would be taking us into another dimension, which I'd rather not get into.
Yeah, the MyLab, military abduction.
Oh, yes. In any case, we'll have something a little bit more mainstream about UFOs on this week's episode, because we have a former police officer. He's involved in investigating UFO cases.
I met Gary Heseltine at the recent Citizens Hearing on Disclosure. I've been an admirer of his work for years. Corresponded with him, I think, through email back in the late 90s. He is a longtime serving detective, law enforcement officer in England. He had an amazing experience in the 70s, a UFO experience, and watched his town power down, apparently as a result of this brilliant white light that flew over. We're going to, I'm sure, hear about that event. But Gary has put together the policeman's UFO database, basically, and he's been combing through law enforcement reports for years and listing down on-duty and off-duty reports by law enforcement officials around the world. And he's got the largest database of its kind. And I can't wait to talk to him at length about this work and also get his impressions of where the field is, what he thought of the citizen hearing, and much more. Gary's a really interesting guy. And I'm really happy that I finally got a chance to meet him.
Gary Heseltine, joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget.
A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Friends, this is Alex Jones for MidasResources.com. For more than 15 years, I have exclusively used Midas Resources for all my precious metal needs. Whether it's bullion or collectibles you're looking for, Midas Resources is simply the best. I own my gold as a hedge against inflation. This Federal Reserve fiat currency could go the way of the Deutschmark and the Weimar Republic anytime. In these historically dangerous times, it makes sense to physically hold gold and silver. Midas already has some of the best deals in the industry. But if you give them a call and mention the radio special, they will give you a list of the day's super specials. Midas brokers are standing by to answer all your questions at 800-686-2237. They also have a lot of informative free literature explaining the opportunities and risk of holding precious metals. They are ready to answer your questions at 800-686-2237. Again, that's 800-686-2237.
Hello, this is Steve Schenck. Alex and I want to thank you for the generous support of the Oklahoma food donations pouring in every day. In just 6 days, over 37,000 servings have been shipped. Your $25 and a subsidy from eFoods Direct will send a 7-day supply of food to someone in need. Please keep Oklahoma important, but we've got serious food issues. For example, the rising cost of food, especially beef. Last year's worst drought in 50 years, and the mandated ethanol production has dried up the feed supply for livestock. Chinese are offering $4.7 billion to buy our largest pork producer. Find out more and get the one solution you can count on at eFoodsDirect.com/Alex or call 800-409-5633. Now get free shipping every day. Call 800-409-5633 or eFoodsDirect.com/Alex.
Have you ever consumed protein powder supplements? I have, and all of them don't taste that good. Have artificial flavors, sweeteners, or unhealthy sugars. About a year ago, I was introduced to a new protein powder that changed my experience. This protein powder made me feel noticeably better, and it tasted more delicious than any drink I've ever had. Here's the experience of one satisfied user named Rich.
The term best of all worlds has been belabored to death. And yet I've just discovered a whey protein powder that truly deserves to be called best of all worlds. Best taste? By far. Best results? By far. You almost feel like you're cheating that something that tastes that good could be so good for you. Thank you, Stephen, and Cocoon Nutrition. One World Whey truly is the best of all worlds. The only way for me. Yours truly, Rich from Georgia. Real user, real happy.
Call 888-988-3325 or visit oneworldway.com. That's oneworld, W-H-E-Y.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Joining us on the Paracast this week, Gary Heseltine. He's a former police officer who has set up an organization called Police Report UFO Sightings, which is a database which involves UFOs seen by police officers. Gary, welcome to the Paracast.
Welcome to you. It's a pleasure to be your guest.
So let's talk about how you got involved in the study of UFOs. And it involves the time that you saw a UFO for yourself a number of years ago.
Yeah, it began with a childhood sighting. I was aged 15 in my hometown of Scunthorpe in Lincolnshire in England. And I was walking my then girlfriend home, called Dawn. I won't embarrass her by name and a surname now. We were walking along a very narrow footpath with no street lighting at that time, and on the left side of us as we walked forward was my, what you would say, high school comprehensive school fields, and on the right side, in England we call them allotments. These are like garden areas for people to grow vegetables. So it was effectively a rural area on both sides, fields on one side and a garden area in darkness on the other side. And as we looked forward, we could see at the end of this long alleyway, housing in the distance, which had obviously, it was dark, it was about 8 or 9 o'clock at night. It was a totally cloudless sky, one of those balmy summer nights where all the stars are twinkling and no clouds, which is rare in England. Basically, as we watched, we were walking forward, we saw coming from our right to left at an elevation of, I would say, approximately 60 degrees, all you can describe it as a bright white light. It appeared to be moving very slowly. It was much bigger than the stars in the background, and I would estimate anywhere 5 to 10,000 feet, not that high. And basically it was moving very slowly, and there was no noise. We just stopped and thought, this is an odd light. And then suddenly, as it went past us, if you can imagine a pathway in front of you, a straight line in front of you, and then the object passing over you, essentially, so you were now behind its flight path, what happened was all the housing in the distance, all the power in the distance and the housing was sort of cut off, a power cut for want of a better word, but it was only behind the area of the light. Now, rightly or wrongly, Dawn became frightened and she got upset. We watched the light, bemused or in awe. And basically what happened was there was a second power cut behind the flight path of the housing in the distance, and the object was moving very slowly in the direction of my home. I was walking my girlfriend home at that time, and I had my bicycle with me. And so what I said was, look, it's heading towards my house, get on the bike, on the crossbar, and the two of us, I'll ride you back, drop you off at your house, which wasn't that far from the end of the alleyway, and I will try to take a shortcut and see if I can catch up with this light. And basically, that's what I did. I dropped her off at her house. The whole area was in darkness, no electricity whatsoever. And then, basically, I got back on the bike, rode like mad, went back down the same alleyway. Eventually I turned right onto a main road. I went about 3/4 of a mile, and eventually I could see that in the distance the power was still on. By this corner, near to where I live, the power was still on in the distance, but not in the area that initially I was riding through. So I rode like mad, and I remember distinctly getting to this corner, which was a left-hand bend, and getting into the light, so moving from complete darkness into where the street lights were on and the house lights were on. And as I looked over my right shoulder at that point, I could see the same white, bright white light slowly at an angle slightly behind me. So therefore, I'd got ahead of it. It was still heading in the direction of my home. I went round 3 corners from that point, which was literally about another 45 seconds of cycling, dropped my bike outside the front door, rushed in to my parents, who were in the living room having a cup of tea, supper time as we would call it, and said, come outside, I think there's going to be a power cut caused by this strange bright light. They just looked at me bemused, as you would, didn't move. So therefore I ran through the hall, ran through the kitchen, out into the back garden, turned around to now face back at my semi-detached house, as we would call it in England, looked back at the house just in time to see the light coming over the rooftop. Now, as it's coming over the rooftop, literally, I'm in the garden, I put my arm straight above my head, straight up like a Superman impression, and basically, when the object went past me, and therefore I was then behind its flight path, there was a massive power cut and the whole area went dark. Now, it's at that point there, how could I predict the power cut? So it's, I realised that that light, from a second geographical position, must have interacted with the power grid in some way. And that's my original story.
How long did this power outage last?
Not long, 25, 30 minutes, as I remember. I'm not absolutely certain, but it wasn't that long. And when I went back into my house, I said, look, I told you there was that light. And they said, oh, it must be a coincidence or whatever. They didn't believe me. They were just seeking in darkness to get candles out. We weren't on the phone at that time in 1975. The nearest phone box for me was about a 10-minute walk. So who do you ring anyway? So I didn't ring anybody. My parents just dismissed it. And whilst puzzled, I didn't do anything about it. The only thing that, in a sense, what happened in the days and weeks afterwards is that I had never, ever been interested in the subject of UFOs until that point. I then sought kind of validation as to what's happened. I'd seen an unidentified light, which is all it was. I don't know what it was. Basically, all I could do in the era before video recording and VHS and Betamax machines was to look in second-hand bookshops. And I think by whatever strange reason, the first book that I ever got was by Major Donald Kehoe in a second-hand bookshop, and it straight away told me about the New York blackout in, I think, 1965, which some people would put down as a UFO trigger that caused that major blackout for several hours. And that kind of validated what had happened to me. How could I predict a power cut? It was ridiculous. How could I predict a power cut to that very moment? So it must be something else other than me.
Well, the thing here, of course, is can we really connect the light in the sky to the blackout? Now, was there ever an official explanation from the authorities as to why the blackout occurred?
I didn't even look. I was so naive about the subject, I didn't even look. I didn't even look in the local paper the next day, the local Scunthorpe Evening Telegraph. So I don't know. I should have. Obviously, I should have if I knew what I knew now, but I didn't then. My parents just dismissed it. I don't know why I didn't look, but I didn't.
Well, the question is now, can you today go back to the newspaper archives or morgue and see if there was a report about the power outage? Check the documents, check the officials. Wouldn't that be a way of validating your case?
No, absolutely. That's on my agenda at some point. I've done lots of newspaper archive trails, and that's one thing that I could do to try to validate that. The only validation I've ever had, and again, it's not a good enough validation from my police trading point of view, is when I first went public with this at a conference, the very first conference where I was introduced to UFO conference in, I think, late 2001. I was introduced by the then former editor of UFO Magazine, which was a British publication by a guy called Graham Birdsall, who sadly passed away. At the end of it, somebody came up to me who I didn't recognise initially because he was completely bald and when I knew him.
We'll find out who that person who came up to him was. We have Gary Haseltine with Gene and Chris in
The Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
If you want to get your website online and you need reliable service, first-class service at the lowest possible price, there's only one place to go. Well, DreamHost has a special promotion with our show where they'll offer you unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click web apps such as WordPress, 24/7 support. You can save over $55. You want to know how? Go to DreamHost.com/radio, DreamHost.com/radio. Whether it's personal mail, whether it's business email, you want reliable, dependable delivery, freedom from spam, freedom from viruses. Well, Polaris Mail offers professional email hosting services for your personal or small business use. Each account uses 25 gigabytes of storage, an easy-to-use webmail interface, and full mobile sync. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial at PolarisMail.com, PolarisMail.com.
Virtually anyone can hack your cell phone and track your calls, your texts, your emails, your every movement, but only if they can detect a signal. Stay one step ahead of hackers and Big Brother with a Blockit Pocket, a custom-made pocket infused with pure silver that creates a complete Faraday enclosure for your cell phone. For free shipping to the Lower 48, visit BlockitPockets.com or call 888-315-9618. BlockitPockets.com. enhancing health and privacy.
We the People grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
You've seen them on Doomsday Preppers. You've seen them on network television, Shipping Wars, and the History Channel. Now, the strongest shelters money can buy are here. Atlas Survival Shelters, made in America from 10-foot diameter galvanized corrugated pipe, up to 11 times stronger than square box shelters, and built to last up to 200 years. And you won't believe the amenities. Atlas shelters contain microwaves, refrigerators, big screen TVs, water tanks, septic systems, bulletproof hatches, and much more. Virtually everything you have at home, just buried 20 feet deep and bombproof. See the amazing Atlas Survival Shelters at atlassurvivalshelters.com or call 1-855-4-BUNKER. That's 855-4-BUNKER or atlassurvivalshelters.com. Financing now available. Atlas Survival Shelters. Better prepared than scared.
Weakened by GMOs, stressed out about money, and blasted by the electric environment. Hi, I'm Pastor Jenny, and that was the state I was in back in 2010. Then I learned about RNA drops. I learned that 97% of my DNA that scientists have called junk is actually packed with millions of gene switches that play a critical role in controlling how my cells, organs, and other tissues behave. I learned I don't have to put up with disease, decay, or decline like I'd been conditioned to believe. I began taking RNA drops, a 100% natural formula designed to turn on those switches and provide me with amazing health and joy. Learn more about RNA drops and order a free sample today. Visit rnafreesample.com. That's rnafreesample.com. Or call toll-free 888-577-3703. Pay only shipping and handling for a free 30-day supply of RNA drops. Get the information you need and the health you want at rnafreesample.com.
Hi, my name is Richard Dolan. You're listening to the Paracast.
We have Gary Heseltine. He is a UFO investigator, former police officer. We were talking about his sighting back in 1975, which may have been connected to a power outage. But now you're talking, Gary, about this UFO conference where you met up with someone. Tell us more.
Yeah, the only validation, and it's not what I would call a definitive validation at all, is that at this conference where I'd first been introduced to an audience, a line of people eventually passed away, and this man stood in front of me, which I initially didn't recognise. He was bald, no hair whatsoever, and wearing glasses. He told me his name, and I knew the name. Basically, he was somebody from school. But he changed so many years later, I just didn't recognise him at all. But anyway, what he says, I saw what you saw. And I says, what do you mean? And he said, well, we were playing football in the street, on a street that was very close to where my original sighting was, near to the alleyway. And he said, we were playing one night and we saw this object passing in the sky. And then there was this power cut. And I distinctly remember it. And I said, well, do you know the date? And he said, no. I says, can you be sure about the year? He said, well, I think it's 1975. And I says, can you give me any other information? He says, apart from being summer, that's what I remember. And I remember the power being out for half an hour. And funnily enough, Rob Simone was present when this guy came up to me and said this, because I remember I'd never had any kind of validation at all, anything similar, and my hairs stood up on the back of my neck, and Rob Simone was like stood at the side of us ready to speak to me, and I looked at him, and it was a bit weird, but that's not good enough in terms of definitively proving, because we've no exact date, we've no exact time, etc. It could be any number of things, but it's a very similar account, which is in the right kind of time frame, summer of 75, and basically describing an object in the sky in the same area within I would say less than a half a mile, quarter of a mile from where we first saw it on the alleyway, so it's very close. So it's either two incidents or possibly the same. But we definitively can't prove otherwise, either way.
Can I give you a homework assignment here? And that is, okay.
You want me to go through the archive and find
exactly. It. I'd like to see you go through the archives, because obviously we're not going to see anything online, or maybe we will. Go through the archives from your local newspapers and see if back in 1975 there was a report about a brief power outage and also about possible UFOs. And listeners, let's go back in time. If you live in the UK,
back to
the summer of 1975, did you see a UFO? Did you have a power outage around the same time? I think this is something we'd like to nail down. And certainly...
Oh, so would I.
Yeah, well, let's get started. Let's validate this. But let's talk about the fact that you established an organization, I guess, around this time. Is this what triggered your interest in establishing your own database of UFO encounters involving law enforcement officers?
No, there's a very precise number of steps that actually led me to creating the database. And the first step was my own sighting in 75. But then I went away from the subject for absolutely 17, 18 years, other than watching it on TV, anything that was read in the papers. I didn't really do anything about it. I didn't become any active researcher. I went away. I had a life, joined the Air Force as a police officer between 1983 and 89. I had a couple of children. That kind of thing, and really it went on the back burner. And then it was really only in about 1995, when I was already a police officer by 6 years, already a detective at that point, when I came across a glossy magazine called UFO Magazine, which was this publication by Graham Birdsall, which was very well established, sold all around the world, 40-odd countries. And I'd read all about pilots in the 50s from the Donald Keyhoe book that I originally got as a 15-year-old, and then had got a few other second-hand books which I collected, but then had gone away, had a life, normal things. And then it was only in 1995 when I come across this glossy magazine, and it just looked like any other glossy magazine in the newsagent. And I thought, wow, this has moved on a bit. This is a nice scientific-looking magazine. It was non-sensationalistic, but it kind of like focused in on pilot reports, military reports, radar reports. And of course, I was then a police officer, so I was looking through evidential eyes. Over the next couple of years, I got the magazine, which was then bi-monthly.
There is a UFO magazine published in America, originally from Don and Vicki Eckernell by Bill Burns, although they happen to have an issue out in a year. This is a totally separate magazine.
Totally separate magazine. It was a British research called Graham Birdsall, and it ran for about 15 to 20 years. And he used to have a 3-day major UFO conference in Leeds, and it ran for 21 years until he died. And he died sadly in 2003, just before what was going to be the 22nd annual conference. So yeah, it was a totally British publication. Some people who know the publication would arguably say it was the best UFO magazine there's ever been. I personally think that's true, but that's for everybody's interpretation. But basically, that was the magazine that I saw. That rekindled my interest to the point where I started to get books that had been written in the intervening 17, 18 years I'd been away from the subject. And this included books like the renowned British author Tim Good, Above Top Secret, Beyond Top Secret, and Nick Redfern was an up-and-coming author, A Covert Agenda, Cosmic Crashes, that kind of thing. And I read those and I thought, wow, you know, there seems to be credible evidence from people that I would respect, i.e. pilots, military, commercial, radar operators, air traffic controllers, sonar operators, etc. Credible people, high-caliber witnesses, as I call them. And over that couple of years, I began to think, well, I'm getting frustrated here because there's still nothing in the media all these years. It's still trivialised in the media. We're still all made to look like we're idiots. And I felt myself being compelled into the subject, shall we say, wanting to do something. So that was the second step, finding the magazine. The third step's a bit bizarre because basically, after a couple of years, around 1998... I had a dream, and everybody dreams, but I don't usually remember dreams. But I had a very vivid dream that upon waking was of a scenario, a fictional scenario of what could prompt governments around the world to force their hands to reveal all they know on the subject. So it was a fictional kind of Hollywood blockbuster, and it was the idea for a film. Now, I'd never written anything in my life. Suddenly, I'd got this idea, and I felt compelled, with no writing experience, no knowledge of layouts or anything like that, to write this story down. And over the next 6 weeks, I then wrote my first screenplay. I've written four full-length feature film scripts, and the first one I wrote, called Conclusive Proof, fictional scenario, and I wrote it with no prior knowledge, and I wrote it, and what it did at the end of it, what it proved to me is, one, I could write, because I'd written a beginning, a middle, and an end, which I'd never done before, and so what I wanted was validation, so who better to send it to was then Graham Birdsall at the magazine. So I sent it to him, thinking I'd never hear anything back. About 3 weeks after sending it to him, I get a phone call one tea time, and he basically was enthusiastic about it, saying it would make a great film, blah, blah, blah. So much so that he actually sent me like a certificate saying this would make a great film, blah, 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 and I'll help you in any way I can, which I didn't expect. He then invited me to go to his upcoming 21st annual UFO conference in Leeds. I worked in Leeds. What's the odds of that? It was on my doorstep. So I went along. He introduced me to the audience, which is where this kind of little story validation to my childhood sighting came about. And on the strength of that and seeing some of the lectures, I again felt being drawn more into the subject. But what eventually made me realise that I wanted to get involved was it was a feeling that of frustration. It was a sense of frustration that the media were trivialising the subject, and I knew what evidence was in terms of what would stand up in a court of law, and they were trivialising it. So it's that sense of frustration.
I understand what you're saying. We're going to do our break now and continue with this discussion. Gary Heseltine joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and Fortean phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO@webtv.net. That's MrUFO@webtv.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
When you need it the most, will your generator, power equipment, or vehicle be ready? Gas and diesel fuels go bad quickly when stored, and more than half of generator failures during disasters occur as a result of expired fuel. PRI fuel stabilizers keep your fuel fresh for when you need it most. Nuclear power stations, emergency service providers, and ships at sea rely on PRI fuel stabilizers. And you can too. Call 888-776-9373 or visit PRIproducts.com to find the dealer nearest you.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a silver dollar in a book explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
What's safer and cheaper than prescription drugs?
Glad you asked. The answer is Renovation Teas. Herbal remedies are much safer and much cheaper than prescription drugs. Taste great, and most importantly, herbal teas are effective and non-addictive. Renovation Tea is especially unique, and here's why. We spent years researching herbs and their beneficial properties. Renovation Teas uses only 100% organic fair trade herbs. Our teas are blended towards specific ailments and health conditions, such as diabetes, blood pressure, anxiety, libido, detox, and much more. All Renovation Teas are formulated and hand-filled in Arkansas. Take care of yourself naturally, the way Mother Nature intended. Order Renovation Teas at renovationtea.com or call 870-784-3121. That's 870-784-3121. Renovation Teas. Renovate your health one bag at a time.
Hello?
Congratulations.
For what?
For losing all that weight. How'd you do it so fast?
ASAP.
ASAP what? What's that mean?
Are you ready to get as skinny as possible, as soon as possible, as simple as possible, and as sexy as possible?
I'm listening.
Then get with the ASAP program. It's real and it works. No smooth talk, no slick advertising, and no exaggerated claims of success.
I've got to know more.
Welcome to ASAP, as slim as possible. Whether you have 10, 20, or 50 pounds to lose, ASAP is your weight loss answer. ASAP targets the abnormal fat reserves and makes them available to be burned as fuel and contains no caffeine or hormones. Order ASAP at wholesale prices or join the team to share the business with others. Visit GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Lose weight and look great with ASAP, as slim as possible.
This is Leslie Kane, and I'm with the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and you are listening to the Paracast.
On the Paracast with Gene and Chris, Gary Heseltine joining us. He's a former police officer who got involved in investigating UFOs, had his interest triggered by his own UFO encounter back in the summer of 1975. Now, a fast question here. You're a retired police officer. Did you retire for the time to do more UFO research, because it was your time? What?
Yeah, absolutely. When I started the database, which was in January 2002, with an article that appeared in that UFO magazine, because after that conference, I basically went to Graham Birdsall and said, look, I've had this idea for a database of police officer sightings. Can I write an article for your magazine? I'd never written before. He said, yes, I like the idea of it. It sounds credible. So I did that. So it was launched public in January 2002. And straight away, I got officers responding. And it literally has carried on since then. So that's basically where it all began.
Now let's go back here very briefly to those screenplays you wrote. Were they ever considered to make actual movies or TV shows?
Yeah, bear in mind, I didn't know anything about formats, and it's a very stringent format.
Yes, I know, I've done it. Yes.
All lots of things. It was submitted to a number of people. I did various courses and things like that, and I got some good reviews. But nobody would make it, and I never made a breakthrough. But it's like, unless you're in the subject, unless you've got somebody pushing you who can open a door who's within it, it's very hard from somebody on the beach, as it were, to pick up a grain of sand. It's a bit like that analogy. Unless somebody opens the door, you're never going to get in. So that's something that if I ever did make a breakthrough, and perhaps we'll talk about the Rendlesham script that I've written with Colonel Charles Holt, which stands a good chance, I think, of making a breakthrough at some point, then that I would then go back at some point to conclusive proof, because everybody who's read it said it's a really good story. And I actually turned it into a 100,000-word book. I've got it, and I'm kind of like toying with the idea of releasing it as an e-book, because the technology is there now. I'd need a couple of months to revamp it, but essentially you could bring it out as an e-book in the next few months if I so decided. So it's something I may go back to, because it's a good story.
I got several questions to ask you, but first of all, a piece of advice from those of us who have been there in book writing, like myself and Chris. Before you publish a book, get a professional editor. Hire a professional editor to do it for you, because there's no way, nobody out there is capable of editing all their own work. You need a professional, a third party who is skilled.
Yeah, I accept that.
Okay, this doesn't reflect on the quality of your writing.
No, but
this is from people who have done it.
You don't see it.
Right. They'll find the things that you missed. Okay, Colonel Charles Holt was on the Paracast 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I listened to the show a few days ago with Leslie Kane, and yeah, it was interesting.
Well, okay, so how did you hook up with him, and how did you come by writing this script about Rendlesham?
Well, basically, that again is a tale in itself. And I'm not religious in any way, and I never believed in fate as such or anything like that. But there are some bizarre kind of synchronicities, which is a word I'd never used before. But what happened there was that because of my work on the database, and I think by about 2006, I'd collected about 200 cases involving about 500 officers, so it was already a substantial amount of officers involved, that the UFO Hunters program approached me with National Geographic to do a program on law enforcement officers, and they wanted to do a bit about the database. So anyway, there's ongoing negotiations about what's going to be in the program, blah blah blah, and then eventually it gets to the filming schedule, and they said, oh, we're flying over with the crew in December 2007, I think it was. And basically I said, well, okay then, so you're coming over to film about me and my work on the database. Well, what other subjects are you going to be filming in England? And they said Rendlesham Forest. Well, when they said that, I said, who are you bringing over for that? And they said, oh, we're bringing over Colonel Holt. And I said, oh, that's good, because I'd like to meet him. And they said, why? And I said, well, I've followed the case for a long time, and perhaps I'm in a unique position to be able to add to the case, because between 1983 and 1989, I'd served in the Royal Air Force as a police officer, and for 3 of my 6 years, I'd served on 2 nuclear bases, doing exactly the same job that those US Air Force police officers had done at Bentwoods and Woodbridge. So I kind of knew the inside track on how it would work with nuclear weapons. And in fact, when I looked at some of the photographs that were out there of the Bentwaters weapon storage area, when I looked at a photograph I'd taken of RAF Larbrook's weapon storage area after the base had closed and I'd gone back a few years later and I was allowed to walk around it freely, it was an identical layout. So I knew it was a nuclear base. And basically, I said, well, I'd like to meet him because I'm sure that there's other witnesses. There's got to be more witnesses who were on the site itself, the weapon storage area site, and also the people in the tower would have definitely seen anything above treetop height. And bear in mind that the trees at that time, when it was a working base, had to be kept, I think, at 40 feet high, uniform around the base, and the actual tower was 80 feet high, so it had a full 360 view. So they said, oh, well, yeah, we quite like that idea. So in a sense, through my own manipulation of the situation, I engineered to meet Holt, and they went for it. And as luck would have it, on the day I arrived at the hotel, the film crew, I think it was about 7 o'clock in the evening, and I arrived, checked into the hotel, and there was a message for me saying, oh, the film crew are out and about doing some filming. And then as it happened, I saw Colonel Holt in the hotel, and he didn't recognise me, but I recognised him. And so I approached him and said, I'm going to be involved in this program. Should we have a drink? And I bought him a drink, and we ended up in this kind of great position where, whilst they're out filming, for about 3 hours, because they didn't come back until, say, 10:30, I had 3 hours in the pub asking every question under the sun to him. And it was during that process of probing him, at the end of that meeting, I said, has anybody ever considered writing a film script based on your experiences in the whole case? And he said, no, people have talked about books and things like that with me, but it's never happened. And I said, look, I kind of dabble in screenplays. I says, I've never had one made professionally into a film. I says, but, you know, I think this is such a good case. Would you allow me to write it? And he basically said, yeah, I'll collaborate on me with it. And that's how it started. So basically what I said was, okay, thanks very much. I'm now going to go away and research everything I can find in the public domain, in books, TV, documentaries, etc., and then come back to you with a list of questions in a few months' time. And he said, okay, and that's exactly what I did.
That's absolutely fascinating. He sounds like the kind of guy that, he's a no BS kind of guy. You could tell, with his appearance on the show, he's very cut and dried. Sticks to the facts. He's not a man of wasted words. He'd be a really good person to write a screenplay with because he's so terse, you know. That's the way screenplays need to be.
Well, he is. And what I think people see things that aren't there in him, in the sense of they think he knows a lot more. But I've asked those questions, and I've asked him some difficult questions as well, things that I've been puzzled by. But he's always come back He's always come back straight away. I mean, that process, I wasn't ringing him up left, right and centre. It was all done by email. So I spent 4 months researching everything and then drew up a timeline of my inquiries, and I'm looking at it through the eyes of a detective, don't forget, doing an evidential timeline. Right. And then said, right, here we go, there's this question, I want this answering. And every time I sent, fired off an email with a question, he would come back literally a few hours later. Obviously there's a time difference, but a few hours later. And I always found him very responsive. He didn't appear to be in any way shallow, hiding anything like that. For me, we always have had a very good rapport, and it continues to this day. And basically, he answered everything, and after about a year, I came up with the first draft of the script. And so I sent him it and said, what do you think? And he said, no, I like it. It's good. It kind of fills in the blanks. You've told it over the whole event, not just his event, and incorporated three nights of activity. And that's been an ongoing process. But what you've got to realise is that I was a working detective. So when I was in the job, I couldn't do it all the time. You just don't have the time.
Right.
Especially if you're having a life, you've got children, whatever. So it was on an as and when basis. So it's been going on over several years. And of course, the more I've learnt about the case and the more people I've talked to, you slightly change certain things. And my writing skills have improved as well, etc., over a period of time. So in a sense, during the time I was in the police, it was a step-by-step, gradual focusing and sharpening up of a script. And I would send it to people within the film industry that would sometimes approach me, you know, I'd say, look, you know, if there's any screenwriters out there, you know, come approach me, and I would send the material to them. And eventually it's got to the stage now in retirement, or close to retirement, that I realised that I was pretty close with the reviews that I was getting back from professional people in film and television that had read it, that I was pretty close to having something that's pretty much there in terms of pitching.
Gary Heseltine joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Introducing a 30-day emergency food supply for only $99. At 30dayfoodsupply.com, you can purchase Oregon Trail Foods' one-month supply of high-quality, nutritious, and healthy emergency meals for less than $100. These vegetarian meals are all-natural, non-GMO, high in carbs and protein, and are packed with oxygen absorbers in Mylar pouches. They take up to 70% less space than number 10 cans, have a 20-year shelf life, and huge portions, over twice the serving size of some competitors' meals. Oregon Trail Foods and 30dayfoodsupply.com keep prices low by buying direct from producers in Oregon and then pass the savings on to you. Purchase a 30-day, 90-serving emergency food supply for only $99 this month, and $10 ships your entire order to the lower 48. Call 541-673-6666 or visit 30dayfoodsupply.com, where they make preparedness affordable. 30dayfoodsupply.com. Got it? Get it. Go to 30dayfoodsupply.com.